WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Could it be a replay of Charlottesville's August 12th? Lexington, yet again, prepares for a weekend encompassing both Lee Jackson Day and Martin Luther King Jr. Day, with competing parades again this year. The U.S. Senate finally recognizes Virginia's Native American tribes. And we have an exit interview with outgoing Governor Terry McAuliffe. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, January 12th. In light of the deadly white supremacist rally in Charlottesville last summer, Lexington residents wishing to honor Martin Luther King Jr. have opted for compromise over controversy. Jesse Nadler has more on the potential conflict with the Lee Jackson state holiday.
One thing became clear to residents of historic Lexington after the Charlottesville riots last August. We don't want that kind of attention here. This following its own tense parade that pitted anti-racists against Confederate heritage groups over the state Lee Jackson holiday last January, 2 days prior to Martin Luther King's birthday. That parade was peaceful, but the town decided not to court controversy. So this year, those wishing to honor Martin Luther King will march on Monday, and those wishing to honor Lee and Jackson will march on Saturday. Still, safety precautions are in place. Reginald Early is a spokesperson for CARE, the organization planning the Dr. King parade.
We'll have state and local law enforcement on hand in uniform as well as incognito.
Nothing that can be used as a weapon, no sticks, poles, or boards, is permitted. He anticipates more than 700 marchers.
We want this parade to show the true light of Lexington and all of its diversity and inclusiveness.
In response to City Council's decision several years ago to ban Confederate flags from city flagpoles, the Virginia flaggers who march on Saturday have called for a total boycott of Lexington and asked that participants not spend any money inside the city limits. From Lexington, I'm Jesse Nadler.
Six Native American tribes in Virginia are celebrating today. After a 20-year effort, the U.S. Senate unanimously approved legislation that officially recognizes the Commonwealth's tribes. As Virginia Public Radio's Matt Laszlo reports from Washington.
The British government has recognized and celebrated these six Virginia tribes, but the U.S. government never has. That's because the paperwork necessary to gain federal recognition was destroyed after the Civil War by a racist record keeper who scrubbed the Commonwealth's diverse heritage from the history books. While the House had passed the measure three times in the past, it has always been secretly held up in the Senate. Not this time.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is passed.
Unlike other tribes across the U.S., the legislation prohibits these tribes from operating casinos. But federal recognition now gives them access to other programs available to tribes, like housing and health care programs. Virginia Democratic Senator Mark Warner says it's a huge victory.
In the United States Congress, the United States Senate, occasionally we get things right. And boy, oh boy, this is a day where we get things right. On a civil rights basis, on a moral basis.
Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine congratulated the tribal leaders after they watched the bill pass from the Senate gallery.
You know, we knew you would never give up. We sometimes wondered if you were going to give up on us, but we knew you'd never give up.
Stephen Atkins, chief of the Chickahominy tribe, is ecstatic.
I was just blown out of the water.
Atkins is sad that it took so long.
I do lament the fact that a lot of our Indian leaders have died during this process and they didn't get to revel in, you know, in this victory that we've achieved today.
President Trump still needs to sign the measure. Reporting from the Capitol, I'm Matt Laszlo.
After years of pushing for expanding Medicaid in Virginia, Democrats are hopeful that they'll be able to use their new members in the House of Delegates to finally make it happen. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope has the latest from the Capitol.
For freshman delegate Wendy Godidis, a Democrat from Clark County, the fight for expanding Medicaid is personal.
I lost my brother to PTSD and alcoholism 2 weeks after I announced my candidacy, a candidacy which came about in large part because of the last 2 years of my brother's life.
He applied for Medicaid but was denied. Now Godidis and her colleagues on the Democratic side of the aisle are hoping this could finally be the year to expand health insurance to 400,000 Virginians who live in poverty or with disabilities. Republican leader Todd Gilbert acknowledges he might not have the votes to prevent that from happening.
Well, you never know with such a divided body like we have that's so closely divided. Even people on our side of the aisle have not voted with us on that issue in the past.
One potential compromise being considered: adding a work requirement for those receiving benefits. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
Meanwhile, Democratic Delegate David Toscano, who represents the Charlottesville area, has filed three bills that would directly affect the region if signed into law. The first would allow localities to remove memorials to war veterans. The Code of Virginia states that it is unlawful to, quote, disturb or interfere with any monuments or memorials so erected, marking a litany of military conflicts, including the Civil War. The second bill would allow localities to prohibit firearms and ammunition in public spaces during permitted events. And the third would provide monetary relief for Albemarle native Robert Davis, who was wrongfully incarcerated in the 2003 murders of a woman and her toddler son in Crozet. Finally, this is the last full day of Terry McAuliffe's term as governor of Virginia. McAuliffe's official portrait was unveiled this week. In it, he has his hand on an executive order, the one where he restored voting rights to former felons. McAuliffe sat down for an interview with Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain, and she began by asking whether that order was one of his proudest moments.
Clearly one of them. I would think right up there was build the new Virginia economy, 200,000 new jobs, record $20 billion of investment. But restoring those rights of those citizens, returning citizens, and I've now restored more rights than any governor in the history of America. These people have paid their debt to society. They should be able to vote. They're back. They're paying taxes. So we should not permanently disenfranchise folks our whole life.
Let's talk about Charlottesville. You mentioned it during your State of the Commonwealth as one of the lowest points. Looking back on that day, would you prepare any differently?
I don't think the state would. I put the National Guard, I think it was the first time in decades that the Guard had been committed. We put nearly 1,000 state police down there, the largest ever. So we knew, we'd been tipped off by the FBI and the DHS that, you know, people were being told to come with guns. And the problem we had was unified command, the local jurisdiction under Virginia law. They make the decisions. But at some point, when I was watching television, I called Brian Moran, my Secretary of Public Safety, at about 11:20, I said, I don't care about unified command. Send our state police in. And they did. So I have a bill I'm putting in to give local jurisdictions the authority to ban firearms. If people started opening up fire inside that park, it would have been bedlam.
You have a very boisterous, in-your-face leadership style, a lot different from the incoming governor. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit more low-key. Dare I say, a little more humble?
I don't know about humble, but I mean, we're different personalities.
Do you think there's something that he's going to be able to accomplish that you weren't able to?
Well, I clearly hope he'll do Medicaid expansion. I mean, we're very close. Bill Howell, the Speaker, said it will never happen as long as he was Speaker. Well, he's no longer Speaker. So I'm hoping now we have an opportunity to get it done.
Okay, so back to the portrait. There's a little alligator in the corner. Whose idea was that?
Well, when we sat down with Gavin, I told him a couple things were important to me, economic development. As you know, I'm the most traveled governor in America. I've been on 35 trade missions to 5 continents to bring jobs back. So there's a globe in the picture. When I became governor, you know, they foolishly had put up the port of Virginia for sale. You don't sell your assets. You don't sell Dulles Airport. You don't sell the port. We invested in it, and now it's made money for 3 straight years. It's been saved. It's now had a resurgence. So there's a little cargo ship in there as well. And then right in the corner is a small little alligator head, because in 1980, I once wrestled an alligator for 5 minutes for $15,000.
What happened to that $15,000?
Yeah, I didn't even get it. I was working on President Carter's reelection, and it went to the campaign. So, but as I say, here we now are 40 years later, still talking about that alligator. His name was Jumper. He was about 9 feet tall. He was a big gator, 280 pounds.
Okay, serious question.
Yeah.
Are you ready to tackle Oprah in the 2020 Democratic primary?
Well, I'm not sure Oprah's running. We'll see what happens. When honestly, Mallory, I'm trying to get everybody to focus on this year. We have 36 governor's races up this year. I'm heading up this big national effort on redistricting to get fair lines. So I'm doing those two things. I'll travel extensively this year to 36 states, helping the governors. I've got over 125 speaking requests already to do different things. So we'll play it out this year. We'll see where 2020 goes down the road.
Well, thank you for joining me.
Honored to be with you. Thank you very much.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your Friday.